PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Welcome, everybody, to Off Course Episode 12, The Dirty Dozen. We've done it. I'm your host, Rob Miller, and with me, as always, is Dan Edwards. Dan, how the heck are you right now?
I'm good, buddy. We got a weekend full of golf ahead of us. Thank goodness for that.
It is really nice that we can watch golf every week, despite the COVID diagnoses, whether they're false positives or what. Everybody seems pretty healthy that's gotten tested out there on tour, and some are back, like Cameron Champ, right? Because it was apparently false positive. So it's pretty nuts. I just say enjoy it while we have it, or while it lasts, right?
Yeah, we lasted 30 seconds without a Rona comment. Naturally, it happens. It's a part of our world now, but obviously we here at Off Course are trying to talk about more interesting things than that, things that relate to the game of golf. And we have a weird schedule today, which is, it should be a lot of fun.
I think it's plenty off course, like a Dustin Johnson drive, you know, like, I think it's kind of that way, just kind of off course, actually, when you think about it. Okay. But anyway, you can follow us on social, Canadan Golf on Twitter, Canadan 82 on Instagram. I'm Rob Miller Time on both those channels. We're part of the Hackers Paradise Radio Network, which has range days with Canadan as well, and J-Man. And also, we can't forget Adam at Golf Unfiltered, because even if we forget him, he reminds us really quick.
I think we owe him a return trip. He needs to be on one of these episodes soon.
He does. We need to get some other food topics and then really dive into it. He's very worried about the Corona stuff. So, and that, not the food Corona, not the drink Corona.
The drink Corona?
Yeah, the drink Corona.
It's that kind of weekend, isn't it?
Yeah. So wherever you are, click subscribe, follow us. Hopefully you enjoy the show, and let's get going.
Hey, before we do, Rob, there's one other little plug I want to do here.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Over on the THP community, which is a great collection of golfers from all around the world, we are doing a post drive this quarter. We've done actually two of them already this year. So if you're unfamiliar with the site, it's a place to talk golf. Via typing as opposed to words through your mouth. So anyways, if you're not familiar, you should go check it out. We have an opportunity to win some pretty cool prizes doing that post drive. And for those who are familiar, get your fingers ready, because it's going to be another fun couple months over there.
Yeah. Typing versus words with your mouth. That's a perfect, perfect description. I wouldn't change a thing.
I say words and I said, I got to go somewhere with that. But it wasn't great.
How ironic you stumble on words.
Yeah. All right. Good Lord. Let's get this episode going.
Fantastic. Well, guess who won last week on the PGA Tour? It's actually a pretty damn momentous victory.
My guy, DJ.
Yeah, DJ, man. That he just kind of just lumbers up, hits the ball, and just goes on his way. Like nothing rattles him whatsoever. He actually looked, I was talking to a buddy of mine this weekend, and he was like, oh, he's DJ, I thought he was going to miss the cut. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, because that course, I mean, everybody shoots 62 there at least once, seems like.
Yeah, his 61 was on Saturday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Where he just vaulted into the lead. And so that puts him in some really interesting company, right?
I trust that you did your research.
God, trust.
So he is now in the top 30 winningest golfers in the history of the game.
It's amazing. 13 straight years with at least a win.
That is a one heck of an accomplishment. If you really drill down and think about the way that people have talked about DJ over the last couple decades, he's still got it done to the point where he is in a very, very small group of people when you look down the tour win chart.
Yeah, it's sneaky. I guess you get kind of spoiled. You know, you expect DJ to be kind of like in contention all the time. He's such a freak athlete and such a great golfer. I think if I looked, I'd say his putting has been his bugaboo. Like, you know, even when he won his US Open, you know, it was still kind of like, kind of thing. I don't know if that's the thing that's always held him back, or, you know, the presumption that his attitude is a little, you know, a little lazy. I don't know, just not caring all that much. But I'm saying
a laissez-faire, a little casual.
Yeah, a little cash. But, you know, that's a weird thing to even be saying about someone who's done so much, yet you still kind of feel like he just hasn't fulfilled the full potential that he could have come out and just dominated everybody. You know what I mean?
Is bugaboo a part of the off course drinking game? I think you've put it into at least 10 of our 12 episodes thus far.
I think I love the word bugaboo.
Okay.
I think if someone's listening to off course and bugaboo is said, should we have like a bell or something that goes off? Or you have a bell, I have a bell, and we say our little buzz phrases and the bell goes off.
We need to get some big sponsors to get more of these fancy podcasting features added, like sounds.
Yeah, he hit such a great drive. It was a Chick-fil-A drive. Jesus, yeah. I'm good with that.
So back to DJ. I think when I've had this conversation a number of times over the last couple of weeks, but it was more reflective of Ricky Fowler. And one thing that people get so stuck on when it has to do with the success of a golfer is the number of majors won. And I think that's a really tough category to isolate, because you only have ideally four chances a year to win a major. And as I look through the chart, there really aren't that many guys, even above DJ, with more than two majors. So I'm starting to wonder, like, at what point does it stop being about majors and the number of wins plays a much larger role?
I think wins plays a larger role in golf than, say, the analogy that kind of pops in my mind is like a great quarterback, right? Like, take a Dan Marino, never won a Super Bowl, but he won so many games and dominated everywhere. But he never won the big game. You get one Super Bowl a year and it's a team effort. In golf, it's an individual effort, and you fight every week. So I don't know, it's not a perfect analogy for sure, because there's only one kind of Super Bowl. But I think golf wins without majors. I think you can make a compelling argument. We're not talking about world. We're talking about us talking about greatest golfers. Not are you enshrined in World Golf Village, right?
So DJ is, I think, 36 this year, born in 1984. So he's got plenty of years left on his player card if he really wants to continue playing the game. My question to you, Rob, is how many wins do you think he ends with?
Oh, boy. I'd say he 36. He's got plenty. I bet you he gets to 50. I can't see why he couldn't.
50 wins.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he could.
Wow. Because, so are you saying that he's going to start playing better?
I think the dude has been, well, he's got the trust in the bag now. Paying attention? we'll talk about that a little bit. But yeah. I think that he has the ability to dominate. Like, think about this. 14 years on the tour. If he wins, you know, twice a year, I think that's in a realm of possibility there, don't you?
I think DJ can win any tournament he enters. It's just a matter of, as mentioned, this casual presentation. Like, does he walk around as though he doesn't care, or does he just genuinely not care? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if we know. I don't know if he knows what it is actually, but you kind of have to play golf according to your comfort level and personality. And what I mean by that, remember before Jim Flick passed, I had the opportunity to have dinner with him, and we were talking about that. It's like, kind of, you have to play golf along with your, you know, and according to your personality. Like if he was this super aggressive, like Tiger Woods at the top of his game, it just doesn't seem like DJ. That would be out of his comfort zone, even though you think, well, maybe that would help him. In honesty, it probably wouldn't, you know, because he wouldn't be able to, he's trying to be someone he's not.
So if let's four rounds of golf, put DJ out there, don't give him a scorecard and don't give him a huge leaderboard. Do you think you know what he shot overall after the four rounds?
I think so. I do. I really do. I think he knows.
So I've always been a huge fan of DJ, and for a lot of weird reasons that don't really make sense to me, I love how casual he is about things. I really enjoy that about him. It's such a fascinating thing for the game of golf because so many people you go out and play with a 15 to 20 handicap who's more emotional than DJ will ever be at any point in his career.
That's true. Those guys are exciting.
And it's like, you know, how to have that sort of cavalier attitude towards the game. It's kind of appealing to me. I'm almost jealous that he can go about it in such a casual way.
I think cavalier is your buzzword.
Yeah.
Of off course. I like it. I dig it.
All right. Okay.
Cavalier's good. Yeah, so, I mean, he just wanders down the fairway, you know. He's at like one of those bachelor auctions. Just like, yeah, his DJ is a top 30 golfer of all time. He enjoys jet skiing, you know, like whatever else. I mean, I do love it. Like it bugs me to some degree, but I actually really do love it because it's just part of him.
So winning 29 tournaments, so he's got 8 more to go. That puts him in the top 20 of all time. I'm very comfortable in assuming that he will become a top 20 golfer of all time from a win perspective. I'm not sure I've been more sure about something that DJ can do. The one thing that's fascinating to me, Rob, is a couple years ago, he clearly went out and worked hard on his wedge game. There's no doubt in my mind his wedge game improved dramatically, and his tee game was always like, you know, 90% great, 10% where the heck was that going? But one thing that has kind of always held him back has been his putting.
This is true. I think it's not just a perception. I think it's probably reality.
So he had the Scotty in the bag for a long time. Then he switched to the Spider and it seemed like things were going okay. But this year's been a little bit different. He switched to a truss. He did not trust it. Went back to the Spider.
I'm not going to survive it. I'm telling you right now.
And then he came back to a totally different truss.
Yeah, he had one of the. It's hard to believe we could even say this, but a wackier truss.
Said trust.
I think I did. I don't. That it can stop.
Oh man. A little off course here, as we watch the coverage on the Rocket Mortgage, we're watching Tyrrell Hatton just absolutely throw a fit on the fairway, which is basically the polar opposite of what TJ does out there. I'm pretty sure he just kicked an imaginary pop can down the fairway.
Pop can. You could say that because of where the Rocket Mortgage is, so I'll accept that. But that is it's soda here.
Coke can?
It's not a Coke can is fine.
Is it? That's your bugaboo, is it?
That would be pop is a bugaboo.
Okay. So back to DJ.
Yeah. So he's got a truss in the bag, or does he? That's a good question, right? So I don't know if anybody's seen this, but it was first put out there on Twitter. But there was, if you compare the normal truss. TB1. And if you haven't seen a truss, you might not have seen it in person, I guess, but if you haven't seen pictures of the truss, it has this hosel design that's supposed to be, I'm not even going to read the description of what they say, but it's supposed to help resist twisting at impact because that's such a big problem. The truss is a very odd shape, this triangular solid hosel design. DJ's compared to the TB1 retail model, his proto looks basically like your typical plumber neck or plumber's neck, whatever you want to say. I don't get any phone calls or anything. The angle where the shaft is aligned with the face is very different. It's much more heel shafted than the retail model. Totally different putter, and I bet you it putts completely different.
So it doesn't surprise me that a guy like DJ would require going back to a blade to have some success, because there's a lot of neutrality in a mallet that maybe didn't work out for the way he was putting. And these guys on tour, they're so good that they're obviously not going to need a ton of forgiveness or MOI support when they're putting. Maybe DJ has an argument there, but I don't know. When it comes down to the actual truss itself, what is confusing to me is why would you use a putter like that without the design elements that makes it so unique? What is the point of that?
Well, that's where you get into the whole behead argument, right? Is that if you're a manufacturer and you need someone to be playing a line of your product, then what you do is you create B-heads. It's been done for years. I remember back in the day, there were B-heads for Camilo Vidigas when he was playing RBZ irons, but they weren't anything close to the retail model. They're pretty sick. They had a shiny black finish on it, except for the cavity. They looked pretty darn good, but they needed someone, you know, TaylorMade needed someone on tour to play them, and there you go. So what you do is you get something that kind of looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, but it's not the same duck.
So it's interesting we talk about this, because not too long ago we had a discussion on the THP community forums where I caught a lot of heat for saying that drivers on tour needed to be a little bit different as a solution to some of these distance problems we had. And I caught some heat. People were saying to me that if it's not the same product, people won't buy it. So this is kind of going against that. People look at this truss and they say, well, it's not the truss I could buy at the store, so I don't want it. Do you think that happens with something like this? Do you think TaylorMade, they recognize that maybe there's a whole different head that they're not considering using? Do you think there's any sort of overlap there? Or do you think that people watching just are clueless enough that they'd go and roll truss because it's DJ's truss and wouldn't know the difference?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say clueless. I'd say not aware, you know, right? And it's not aware on purpose, right? You don't, the Nike Tiger ball that you could have bought in stores, I know it was a Bridgestone. It gets very confusing when you know all these facts. But the original Tiger ball wasn't a Tiger ball. And there was an uproar. I want to play exactly what Tiger plays. Do you know that this ball is wrong for you? Yes, I want to buy it. You know, so if enough people want to buy it, then you'll get that kind of model. The same way with the, you know, Rory's Nike putter from years ago. That didn't exist in a retail format, and everybody kind of wanted it. There was a groundswell, and boom, they started manufacturing it. Putters are so, you know, in fairness, putters are so personal to each of the players on the PGA Tour that there are all kinds of little tweaks which you may not notice, and rounded bumpers and this and that. But I don't know if there's that demand for the truss because of its polarizing look that you're going to see a DJ model. But obviously, if their sales are possible, I think then it will definitely come to retail. I mean, if the guy lights it up and if he gets 50 wins this year, I'm guarantee you that thing will be out there.
Yeah, a lot of golden ones, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's true. So it could happen, but I just don't, you know, as of yet, there just isn't that kind of demand.
So let's talk one more thing about DJ. Do you think this was a fluke last week, or do you think he's going to win a couple more tournaments in the near future?
Boy, that's always tough to say whether something's a fluke or not. I honestly don't. He didn't play well in previous tournaments, right? Isn't that correct?
Well, the putter swaps is pretty representative of how he felt about his former tournaments.
Yeah, but if he's missing cuts, then it's not just putter, right? I mean, it's got to be more than that, unless there's a ton of three putts on the on the card. I didn't see whether he got some sort of advice between Friday and Saturday that where he went on fire. You know, you have to take it with a grain of salt because, you know, that was, you know, Brendan Todd was leading, was setting the pace, you know, up there at the Travelers. So you have to take that kind of with a grain of salt, right?
It's because he hit like 100% fairways for the first 3 days.
Yeah, he did. And then you saw the, you know, what do you throw up on 15 or something around there? I forget which one it was with the dreaded S word. That, so you got to take it with a grain of salt there. But I think you said it earlier, DJ always has a chance to win. It doesn't matter what kind of course it is, really how they trick out a setup, which I don't think you're going to see that a lot this year. Majors are going to be fun because I think these guys are having some pretty easy setups. Even this Rocket Mortgage, it's a pretty benign layout. Despite what we're watching Tyrrell Hatton do right now.
He was so salty.
He is finding like every bit of trouble. I think he just hit sideways out of a fairway bunker or something.
This is a replay here.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. So before we move on to our, I suppose, final topic of the week, there was a pretty interesting comment by Bryson being made about how he's planning to play this week. Did you see it?
I did not. Tell me.
It was something to the tune of apologizing to Donald Ross.
The happy little Bryson.
Yeah. That he was effectively going to play through and around and abuse some of the locations, the bunkers being only 285 out and things like that. So he plans to tear it up is the long and short of it.
I'm pulling it up right now. That's fantastic. He's second in driving distance this season, over 320 yards, which he's been the most consistent. I think if you look at his stats, the proximity to hole isn't great. So he's having, that's the one thing that is.
Say it.
That's his bugaboo. Got it. Woo. Got to get a bell.
Drink, everyone.
Get a bell. I'm playing golf this afternoon and I'm going to have a lot of bugaboos, I think.
So I'm really interested. I hope we get to have a chat about how Bryson plays this week. And frankly, I hope he wins one because he has been in and around the best score through and through since the return to golf. So it'll be fun to see him actually legitimately destroy a golf course based on his new logic. But I don't think we've seen it yet.
Listen, Bryson, we're talking 6 protein shakes a day, 6 straight top 10 finishes. I don't have another 6 fact, but he is he's playing a course where last year 25 under won. It's a short, you know, course. I mean, how do you not like Bryson? He plays Fortnite. He's on Twitch. Goes after Kepka for like no reason. This is great stuff. That's the one thing, you know, in golf, we don't have that like NFL locker room, you know, to get these quotes and things. You get someone who's paraded up there on a stage, although not the same this year, but paraded up there. They have a coach on how they're supposed to talk, and it's very, very just benign, right? It's just kind of vanilla, all the comments. Bryce is not like that at all. Bring it on, baby. We need more of that.
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
So what's next, Rob?
Our next, well, we talked a little bit about the trust, but we didn't talk about DJ off the tee last week. That was where there were two shots actually that were interesting. But the first one, he hits his drive and it goes near a railroad track out of bounds. And it's apparently out of bounds by inches, literally inches, which is pretty, pretty timely because there was a discussion that JB started on the forum on the hackersparadise.com that his ball went OB, and it's really arbitrary where we consider OB and how courses lay it out. And he would have no problem if those were red stakes, he could play his shot easily, but instead it's OB. So there's a big thread on THP that basically should OB be eliminated and things treated as a hazard. What do you think? Because you're Mr. Rules. You're our guy. You're my guy. And I'm sure you've had these discussions at your club and so forth. What's your opinion on OB?
So I may or may not have half the posts in that thread on THP.
Responses that just respond to people. It's like, that's not it. LMAO. And that's it. That's a, like, what does that mean? But they're there. They count as posts, folks.
Yeah. So I have a hard time being opposed to the idea of out of bounds. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I don't know many. Let's be clear. I believe that out of bounds are in place to defend locations from golfers. That might be, or golfers from locations. That might be a road. It might be a backyard. It might be a driving range, train tracks, whatever it may be. The intent of out of bounds is to keep players away from it and not trying to play their ball out of it. And especially, I did the numbers at my course. There are roads that could be in play on, I think, 8 or 9 of the holes. We have houses that line each fairway. There's a driving range that is in play on 2 holes. All these locations are places that you definitely don't want people playing their golf ball from. And there's no way to modify that to be a penalty area as opposed to OB, because people will take the chance of hitting and maybe getting hit or getting into a fight with a, you know, a local resident, something like that. I think OB is there for a reason. And as much as it is a harsh punishment, I think that there is a reason for that. You do not want to hit there. You don't want the chance of hitting something or someone in those locations. So I think they're critical.
I do agree that that one reason that OB exists is definitely protect locations. I had on this local course, Springbrook, one time I hit a second shot on this par 5 to the right, and it literally wound up like 2 to 3 inches in my friend's yard. Like, there is a cleanly just spray painted OB line, and it's my buddy's house even. There's nothing there. There was no, if this thing was 3 inches to the left, I'd be able to play it without penalty. But instead, I had to take penalty there. That sucks. There's no way to say that. I mean, it does suck for that to occur. But at the same time, you know, as a golfer, everybody's playing the same course. Mm-hmm. It's marked, you know what it is, and we're all trying to play by the same rules. So should we really be, you know, that kind of upset about it? No, it's a bad, it's an awful penalty. I mean, lost balls and an OB are, they can really, especially the old rule was a problem. I remember it was 20 something years ago. My late father-in-law, we were playing this course that was jam packed. I mean, it was so packed. You were waiting since hole one, and we were on the 16th hole. And some guy hits a drive, he's up there. You know, when we get to the tee, they're all looking for things. 5 minutes go by, probably even longer. And all of a sudden, this guy starts wandering back up to the tee. We're like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, lost ball. I got to, you know, or went OB. I've got to re-tee. Like, dude, you have to realize where you are right now. You've got every golfer on this course is pissed off. And it's 98 degrees, and we've been out here for 5 hours already. Just tell your, he goes, it's a money match. Well, tell your friends to tell, you know, that you're ready to pay your money. Don't ever come back here again. You know, I mean, come on, that's, that kind of stuff is awful. So even if you look at the history of OB, there was one time where it was a three stroke penalty. So you want to put some good ball striking ability out there. You better bring your A game if you're going to get 3 strokes for hitting OB. So the rule sucks, but you know, everybody has to live by it. So what's the big deal, really?
So I think the biggest argument against it is people look at, for example, a pond. You use a pond to stop someone from going somewhere. I don't know many places that manufacture a pond to stop someone from going anywhere, but...
You mean a water hazard? Is that what I'm supposed to say?
No, you're supposed to say a penalty area. It's no longer a water hazard.
Penalty area.
Yeah.
I just thought you like my water pronounced.
Water. So
water, whatever.
People say you shouldn't be more penalized going OB than you should be hitting into a pond. And
I almost said it.
So I really struggle with that. And I totally get where people are coming from. And yeah, I am a decent player, so maybe it doesn't happen enough for me to be upset by it. But I can understand where someone gets frustrated by taking so many penalty strokes because of out of bounds. But once again, I think it comes down to the fact that if you have a pawn on the left and an OB on the right, your tendency to miss left is going to be much higher than it will be to miss right. At least that's how my perspective is. I'm definitely going to willingly miss left as opposed to right. There's a good par five on tour. There's only 512 yards this past weekend, and people were struggling on it. And the reason for that was OB left, water right. You see one guy go left, two guy goes right, two guys go right. You can definitely tell that their mentality is if we have to miss here, it will be right. It will not be left. So as much as I feel for people dealing with the strokes and penalties, I definitely think it's good and safe for our game to have that kind of penalty in there to encourage people to play away from those areas. Rob, I do want to include one thing. I'm very impressed that the USGA recognizes this and the frustrations of having to re-tee and has offered a local rule, which frankly, man, unless you're in a money game or in a tournament, I don't see why you can't just take that with you no matter where you go, that says point of entry, come back towards the fairway, you take your two pops and you continue on as though that were your provisional ball that landed there. It's a very, very fair and reasonable way to avoid having to re-tee or hit a provisional off the tee. So to your point, the guy who comes walking back to the tee, he could avoid that by using this provisional rule.
Yeah, I would also venture that is one of the most ignored, like properly, it was at least properly implemented rules in golf, because I think a lot of guys just say, oh, I get my one penalty stroke and I'm gonna hit from here type of thing.
That comes down to the fact that we're all casual golfers, right? Who cares how many strokes your buddy takes unless you're playing in a game, unless you're playing in a tournament? If he thinks that, oh, my ball went in here, I don't care, I'm gonna take one stroke and continue on, so be it, man. I think people get so wrapped up in the rules of golf. Who's he hurting?
I know he's really not hurting anything. And you can, you know, if you're playing a little friendly game, like I play sixes and skins all the time, and people might roll their ball in the fairway, just like fluff it up a little bit or something like that. It doesn't really bother me. You know, it's not something that that I necessarily care about. But the, you know, you could say, hey, don't worry about OB, just like, you know, let's just treat it as a hazard for the purpose of this. But when you report your scores, you should do it accordingly. Whether it's done or not, I have no idea. I don't sit around and watch people due to coronavirus. No, I don't care. You know,
the other part is, are people genuinely tracking? I mean, I've got buddies who are casual players with me who come out once a month or whatever. And we've always joked around that if they don't hit a good tee ball, then it's just shamble off Dan. It's not like it's hurting anyone for them to come up to my ball, put a ball down and play into the green. If they're there just to golf, I say have fun with it, dude. If going OB is so emotionally deconstructing that you can't live with yourself by dealing with it, then just play casual golf. I don't think that harms anyone.
Yeah, you got to swing your swing, and you know, it might accept the consequences. I think that's the biggest thing in golf, is you just have to commit and just hit the damn ball. I think that holds a lot of people back. So even if there's OB, if you're trying to steer your ball around as opposed to flight it, you know, because there is a difference, then you could wind up in trouble. But for the casual casual round, I don't really care if we use our own kind of rules for a game. I told you a couple weeks ago it was paradise out of bunkers because there was no rakes and it just rained. So paradise is just one club length in the bunker, no nearer the hole. And if you can't, then you can't.
That's the most interesting part of the game right now for me. And I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago where I put my foot in my mouth by saying I don't play in many bunkers. And I'm not kidding you, Rob. The next three rounds, I played more bunkers than I could ever remember.
That's amazing.
It's fascinating because we just had a rain this past weekend and I ended up in a bunker, unfortunately, that had, you could tell it had been washed out. So it was like very firm in the bottom middle. And I hit this like huge wide open stance swing and my club just ricocheted so hard. It was not a good situation. Yeah, I'm a pretty good bunker player, man. I love being in bunkers.
That's tough when especially when bunkers aren't consistent from hole to hole. Mm-hmm. But when the rain comes and that gets hard, it's like, all right, how do I play this? Do I just try to clip it? Do I try to chunk and run it, or do I open it wide open and then risk pretty much everything? Right. That's really what you do. You risk, if you try to chunk and run it, you're either going to leave it in the bunker or you're going to hit probably a pretty decent shot, but you're not blading that thing over from bunker to bunker or something.
I'm going to risk everything. I'm a high flash guy out of the bunker and I don't care who knows it.
So you don't hit in bunkers, but you love bunkers. And did that love come from my little hex that I put
on? Nah, man. I really enjoy bunker play. I think that it is such a fun and creative way to try and get the ball close to the hole. And there's so much action you can produce out of a bunker. I think it's a ton of fun to play out of them. Now, I hate fairway bunkers. They can all just die in a fire or whatever you want to say, but
die in fire.
Greenside bunkers are my jam. I love them.
See, I'd rather have I think fairway bunkers just clip that thing nicely with one extra club. It's great, actually. I love fairway bunkers, I'm gonna say.
Yeah, you're insane. I think anyone who's out there who has a strong opinion on bunkers and where they belong in golf, I say put ponds in the middle of fairways instead of bunkers. Come at me at Canada and Golf.
Well, the new course at Bandon, what is it, Sheep Ranch? They have no bunkers on the property. So, and there was an argument for that. They literally had a design argument for that. I don't know if it was, they just did. To me, it's, I don't want to do maintenance on bunkers. That's what it means. Because I've got to put drainage down there every day. I got to go rake it. If we made the bunker with a high wall, if it rains, I got to send my guys out there and go put sand back up on the walls, which is the worst bunker design in golf, right? I mean, that's just kind of pointless and just probably kills the higher handicappers. But Sheep Ranch, they decided to just really just have like kind of like grass swales and so forth on the property.
So it's like the new COVID style golf course, no bunkers in play.
It's just, that's just kind of weird. I mean, is that, I can't see really any other option than, yeah, we don't have to maintain bunkers now. So done.
Interesting.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I mean, you would expect some pretty gnarly rough though.
Yeah, nothing like we're seeing at the Rocket though. Some of the rough these guys have been in has just been disgusting.
Well, this is a pretty narrow, it's pretty narrow, right?
Yeah, the green side though, it's not even like the fairway rough. It's when you get out green side, it looks like this is when you start to wonder if your neighbor's okay. Like you give them a call, like, dude, your grass is getting a little long. Are you good?
Dude, we're just making sure. Yeah.
It looks gross.
Yeah. There's a 78 Cadillac on your lawn. It hasn't moved in about 12 years. I figure I'd give you a call.
I mean, this grass is gnarly and I'm going to have fun watching these guys try and navigate it this week because like you said, it does look pretty narrow. So yeah, we'll see who wins.
It's not super long. Boys, Fowler is kind of a little loose with the drives. Snedeker's doing okay. What is he at now? I didn't even look. But the Sungjae Im, boy, that is an interesting swing right now, right?
Ugh. I need a lot of alcohol to watch St. James swing.
It is.
I looked over to my coverage and I was like, why are they slow-mo replaying this guy's backswing? And then I realized it wasn't a replay.
it's interesting. He's like incorporated a tiny nap at the top. Just very slow and deliberate and then stop. He's putt for birdie right now, but that's odd. It reminds me almost of Duffner years ago. I don't know if anybody remembers Jason Duffner putting, because when's the last time we watched him putt? He just hasn't been in contention or a featured group or anything like that in so long. But remember, he'd just get up there and it's like, someone want to wake him up, tell him he's focus. That was like originally during the Jason Duffner Keegan Bradley shootout. Back in the day
when life was good.
Have things changed, huh?
Well, DJ is now our guy, going for 22.
Definitely our guy. And I guess we've hit on all our topics for this week. We've gone off course plenty of times. Hopefully not OB though. Too penal.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope everyone has a very safe and happy 4th of July. If you do celebrate it, I just finished celebrating July 1st is Canada Day. So I double down being a sort of a mutt of the two countries. So I'll be enjoying some golf this weekend. I hope you do as well, Rob. And for everyone out there listening, be safe, be smart, have fun. Make sure to follow us on socials, as we mentioned, and let us know what you think of these episodes, because we'll be back with Lucky 13 next week.
Lucky 13, which goes out on a Friday. I'm just putting that out there.
Ooh.
Yeah. But happy Canada Day, everybody. Because if you're listening to this, then it's Canada Day.
Perfect. Thanks, Rob.
Later.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.